The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Dr. Smith, today we have a great topic, and that is, there are two parts to it, and that is Cornell Cooperative Extension's Relatives as Parents program and the Sober Parenting Journey program, and they are both designed to help families and children. And we're very fortunate to have a return guest, Jennifer Patterson, who's coordinator of Relatives as Parents program at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Ulster County, and her colleague, Allison Solion, youth educator for the Relatives as Parents program.
Welcome,
ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's begin by revisiting. I know that we talked about Relatives as Parents, or RAP as it's known, Jennifer, last time you were here. For the benefit of our listeners who didn't hear that program, can you tell us what that program is about?
Sure. So RAP, again, stands for Relatives as Parents program. And the purpose of the program is to really assist relative caregivers. So when we say relative caregivers, we're really talking about family members that have taken on the responsibility of raising a relative child. Usually the reasons that these children need to be raised by a relative are because their biological mom and dad are not available. They're physically or mentally not able to. Sometimes there's substance abuse, drug addiction involved. Other times there's incarceration, and a few instances here and there that we've come across and experienced, parents are deceased. So the program is really designed to help assist the relative caregivers by providing support, education, information. We provide youth information as well, youth activities. It really brings the what we call a kinship family together in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. And has the need for that grown over the years, and or at least since you've been familiar with it?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, because you never actually know how many kinship families are out there.
Uh-huh.
They have to sort of make themselves known and seek information. The belief is that there are many more kinship families in the county than are actually reported, so to speak. I do know that through the Department of Social Services and the recent census, there was about 1,800 in the county, but that's only if people report the kinship family situation, and that's not always the case. A lot of times it's informal, so kids might be living with grandparents, but you know, the courts are not involved or the Department of Social Services is not involved.
Mm-hmm. How do folks find their way to you, to that program?
It's really by referral, and over recent years, probably word of mouth. So a lot of times these families are involved with social services, family court, which we have a lot of experience with as far as just connecting caregivers to some of the resources that are available through DSS. And word of mouth, we've had a lot of family members join because, you know, they have a neighbor or a friend that's part of the program, and they're in the same, very same position.
And can you speak a little bit to the challenges, particular challenges that, say, grandparents face, you know, having now taken charge of grandkids when they thought maybe their child-rearing time was over?
Yeah, I'd love to answer that question.
Sure.
So a lot of our caregivers face age. So they'll end up with a very young child, sometimes a baby, and they're pushing in their 60s, sometimes their 70s. So caring for an infant and a toddler and even a young age, school age child can be really difficult when you're dealing with your own ailments due to age. Also, a few of our caregivers are trying to retire or get out of the work field and are unable to do that because of the financial strain that taking on a child and raising a child can bring. So we help them navigate that. We always tell them about the TANF form or the child-only grant, that they're almost always eligible for. And it's not a lot of money, but it does help kind of cut the cost for them monthly. And it helps with the kids specifically in school, buying books and feeding and clothing. The children can be expensive, especially when you're kind of on the outskirts, ready to retire, not looking to work for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. And just the sheer energy of dealing with a young one, right? I mean, kids are a handful at any age, but...
And, you know, it also brings up other interesting stuff. You know, it's a different time now. It's 2018. I mean, I just know in my lifetime, I have children that are years apart in age, and it's different from when I raised my first until my last. So a lot of our caregivers raised their kids in, you know, the 40s and the 50s, and now they've got, you know, a 9-year-old, and it's 2018, and there's social media and there's electronics, and it's just a different world.
Proliferation of drugs and all kinds of violence and all kinds of issues.
And they're just at a loss not knowing, because they don't have any experience, you know, to draw upon. So not that we're experts, but we do a good job, I think, bringing in people that can speak to some of these issues to our support groups as a way to provide them useful information that'll just sort of help them navigate the job of raising kids again.
Mm-hmm. We also have the freedom to ask caregivers what they need from us. So we base a lot of our programming on feedback we get directly from our caregivers within the program and also the children. So we have the freedom to kind of make our program what will really help them. And it's been beneficial, I think, to everyone.
Wow. And so describe what a support group might look like and feel like to folks, how it's structured and so on.
We meet monthly, usually at the end of the month. We do take off in the summer, but we do other youth activities and other intergenerational activities during the summer. Mm-hmm. But basically, the family comes in. We always have a family meal, so they don't have to worry about food. And luckily, Jen works with the caregivers, and I'm able to work with the youth, so they don't have to worry about childcare. As long as the children are 5 and up, I do a youth activity with whatever kids come, and Jen can then do an adult speaker or educational activity with something that pertains directly to the caregivers.
Mm-hmm. Our space down in the Kingston Plaza is large enough, so it really does accommodate. We have a large conference room, as I'm sure you probably have visited.
Been there. Uh-huh.
That works really nice. And we have a smaller conference room. So depending on the number of youth versus the number of caregivers, we can kind of flip-flop between the rooms and have space for everyone. But we always start off with a meal, which includes everyone in the large conference room. It just seems to get us off to a good sort of connected start.
Mm-hmm. And so you have speakers speaking on various topics about... raising children and health and wellness and those kinds of things?
We've had speakers that have come from RCAL to talk about IEPs and, you know, children that might have special needs and what rights are in the school system. That was an issue that came up. We had Planned Parenthood come on a number of different occasions. They do some wonderful programming for youth and caregivers together and then also separate, you know, being able to discuss topics that I probably don't have to go into a lot of detail that can be just really difficult for caregivers to discuss openly with kids. We've had a woman come from, I believe it was the Department of Health. She did a presentation on
disaster
preparedness.
Right.
That was really
uh-huh.
interesting. Uh-huh. I believe we also had another presenter from the Department of Health who talked about vaccinations and the importance
mm-hmm.
of.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we do usually the beginning of the year, starting January, which would be the end of next month, our first meeting is like an information collecting. So we usually hand out a survey, see what topics that they're interested, areas that they want to learn more about. And then Allison and I take a close look at that and figure out the plan for the year and start lining speakers up. Sometimes we don't have a speaker. It's just general support. Come in, let's have coffee and talk about what's happening and kind of catch up.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question, that I'm sure that there's the socialization aspect and the social support is really critical to your work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of our caregivers have made relationships with each other, and the kids have made relationships with each other. Jen and I have been there for 8 years now doing this, and a lot of our families have stayed with the program for as long as we've been with it. So it's great to see the kids grow and see our programming grow because the kids have grown.
So that's great.
It's been an exciting experience. It's nice that we have that opportunity to stay with them mm-hmm. rather than just seeing them for a short period of time and then hoping and wishing them well. We get to actually see our progress and see their
progress.
I'm
sure you have the benefit of a certain kind of a peer interaction Definitely. That would evolve from that just naturally, since these folks are with you for, you know, that number of years. They can certainly act with newcomers to give them the kinds of supports that they've experienced, you know, someone may need.
Yes, actually, I utilize my older children now that I've known since they were 8. They're now in their teens. We created Teen Wrap out of kind of the desire to keep them within the programming, and they help me with the little kids now. Mm-hmm. So that gives them some work experience and some volunteer experience, mm-hmm. and I can then help them on their way as they transition into adulthood, which has been very special for me.
That's an added advantage for sure.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to learn a lot more about all these programs, and we're going to talk about the Sober Parenting Journey, which is a very interesting program. So first we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after these words.
The heart is a complex organ, but finding specialized cardiovascular care in Poughkeepsie and Kingston is so easy. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital are now home to WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute, the Hudson Valley's largest multi-specialty cardiovascular practice. They have state-of-the-art diagnostics and innovative imaging and testing technologies. You'll receive comprehensive cardiac and vascular care from some of the world's top cardiologists and vascular surgeons. You'll also have a seamless connection to advanced care at WMC Health's flagship hospital, Westchester Medical Center. The best cardiovascular care comes from the best people, and now the very best are right in your backyard. Visit wmchealth.org/heart to discover more about WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital. Members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network. WMC Health. Advancing care here.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guests today are Jennifer Patterson and Allison Solian from the Cornell Cooperative Extension's Relatives as Parents and Sober Parenting Journey programs. Before the break, we were talking about the ways in which individuals can find the program. Are there special qualifications to be eligible to join the program?
Only that you're raising a relative child. That's really the only qualification.
And how is the program funded?
RAP has a few different funding sources. So we receive funding from the Office of Children and Family Services. We also receive funding from the Dyson Foundation, which has been a longtime funder for the last almost decade. And we do currently receive funding from United Way of Ulster County, who has been a very nice supporter the last number of years.
That's wonderful. The Dyson Foundation has been a prominent,
it's done a lot
in this Ulster County, so we're very grateful for their contributions to our efforts.
So we'll give contact information for both programs at the end of the program so people will have it their last thing to remember before we to go off the air. But moving over to the Sober Parenting Journey, Allison and Jennifer, I coordinate the Ulster County Opioid Prevention Task Force, and Dr. Smith obviously is deeply immersed in those issues, as is the county executive and our entire community. And this program sounds really interesting. So would you like to tell us a little bit about it and how it meets those needs?
Sure. So Sober Parenting Journey is actually an evidence-informed curriculum that is in place to help parents, biological mom and dad, who are currently in recovery. So they have to be at least 30 days clean to be able to participate in the program. It is a fairly long curriculum. It's 14 weeks, so there is a real element of commitment. The groups meet weekly. We usually don't exceed 12. Otherwise, it becomes a little too big for everyone to be able to, you know, speak and be heard. The groups meet weekly, and they're in two-hour time slots. And again, that's another program that starts off with a meal. It's actually in the curriculum. That's how we start. And then we move into the materials that are being covered that day.
And is it, does it cover all types of substance use or specific categories?
Any addiction. So we have participants that have had alcohol issues, opioid issues, all substance abuse across the board.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing participants from all demographic groups or
all demographic groups? Mm-hmm. It's been a real eye opener. Mm-hmm. All demographics. Scattered throughout the county and come from all different backgrounds, education. It's really been quite a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm. And is it geared? Is the commonality that they're all parents?
They're
all parents.
All of them have children. And at some point, the children were taken out of their home and they're making every effort to get them back. Some of them have multiple children that have been taken out of the home. Some of them have just one. The children are sometimes with kinship family, so they're with grandparents who are helping to raise them while they're undergoing treatment. Others have their children have been placed in outside foster care. But they're all parents facing, addiction and in the recovery process.
So is the participation in the program a prerequisite for getting their kids back or part of a court order, or how does that work?
Both. Uh-huh. So we have some that are mandated by the courts and then some that have voluntarily heard about the program and really just wanted to be a part of it in an effort to try to better themselves. So, again, it goes both ways there as well.
Mm-hmm. And so... Tell us a little bit about the curriculum. What happens in a typical meeting or a series of meetings?
So as Jen mentioned, it always starts with a family meal, mm-hmm. And that's to really model a family meal and how important that can be to bring the family together. So it's a parenting technique as well as delicious for everyone involved. and then the 14 sessions differ. They definitely ask some pretty intense, poignant questions that Jen and I, what I love about this curriculum is we're in it with them. So we're not teaching at them. We're actually in the journey with them. So we answer all the same questions that they do. We just answer it as it pertains to our lives rather than just addiction. So we're modeling everything for them and then they answer the questions. And what I love about Jen and I's partnership in this co-facilitation is that with our trust and our relationship, it really opens up the door for them to share really deep and personal things about their journey in recovery. And I think it's very helpful. We've actually seen a few of our participants after they've completed it. And they've told us how well they're doing and they check in and it's been really great. We've made some friends out of this process as well.
And they've brought their kids in that they have since gotten back, which has been really rewarding that we get
That's
to see.
That's really great, yeah. Right? That's like a really living, special. Breathing success, mm-hmm. right there. So without getting into details with any specific individual, what are some of the common challenges that are associated with these conditions in the groups? What are things that you hear over and over again about the struggles that people face and the obstacles and the difficulties of overcoming them?
One thing that I've seen, we've obviously worked in the Relatives as Parents program, so we've seen, I guess, two sides to this triangle, the children and the caregivers that can end up in this situation because of addiction. But now dealing with the direct parents who are battling said addiction, one of the things that I noticed is a lot of them are in some very deep pain. And they might use these drugs to cover that pain because they haven't actually addressed it themselves in a healthy way. It's their way of coping.
Right.
So in the recovery process, they have to totally rewire how they deal with stressful situations and things that right. pop up every day because they used to self-medicate, but now that's been taken away. So seeing the struggle that they go through to really try and find positive ways to manage stress, manage, right. and everyone knows parenting is stressful, whether
right.
you're dealing
100,
with addiction or not.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Daily life can be stressful. So seeing the pain and the trauma that some of these people have gone through, it's been eye-opening for right. me to not judge, right. because everyone's dealing with their own situations in their own way.
Mm-hmm. And is there some kind of support that exists out when folks are not in the group, in the moment, so that kind of follows them wherever they go at home or wherever that they can rely on?
So typically, the clients that we have seen that have been participating in our program, they're part of other programs as well. So right now, we're actually midway through a 14-week curriculum with a group from Step 1, the outpatient mm-hmm. in in Ellenville. So they're there a few days a week in other groups, getting one-on-one counseling. So we're just a piece of it. They're able to participate in other groups as well.
So that's good to know. So that, you know, you are interfacing with some of the other providers
yes.
in the Ulster County community
yes.
that work toward assisting people in these situations.
Yes.
So step one is one. Could you name?
Step one, we also are connected to Bridgeback. So we've mm-hmm. had some programming at our office, actually, down in the plaza, because that location worked. And they were all affiliated, everyone that participated, all those referrals. It was a pretty sizable group. They were connected to Bridgeback. We've also held groups at Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue.
Bridgeback is part of, right? Are they part of that?
Yes. Right. We were able to secure a location at the hospital. They gave us a really lovely conference room to use. They're usually involved in other programs, so we're mm-hmm. it's not just us. I do know that a couple of our participants in recent groups were connected to receiving services through DSS, and they have another program called Celebrating Families there.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
Barbara Sorkin
yes.
is the deputy director, was telling me about that, and it sounded really interesting.
They do a great job. Their program has a youth component, which ours does not. And their program, I believe, the guidelines are a little bit different as far as the length of time and recovery, I want to say.
And they also have to have an open DSS case.
To
do Celebrating uh-huh. families.
But
we had a few uh-huh. clients doing both at the same time, as a matter of fact, and they said nothing but good things about both programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great to see how much support is really out there for these families. They mm-hmm. can leave our program and jump right into another or do them simultaneously.
Uh-huh. And they really, I think they really like that. I mean, and they come, the attendants, they come. And there's, you know, the sense of camaraderie, and they have peers, and they know, they look forward to groups. And this is such a crucial time, because there's always the chance of relapse. And with our program, it's only 30 days clean, so they're right at that point.
That's right. That's a real, really
right.
vulnerable
yeah.
point. Right. Right. So how do, do participants just come to you, or is everyone welcome who needs the help, or how does that work?
As long as they're 30 days clean,
mm-hmm.
we usually open a registration, and they call to register, because we don't like to exceed 12
mm-hmm.
participants. Again, the group becomes too large. Once they register, you know, we send out a packet of information as far as the location, the start time, and the dates, and they show up.
Uh-huh. And does Cornell, I mean, I know there are Cornell cooperative extensions in many counties throughout New York. Is this a typical program that a cooperative extension? I mean, I associate Cornell mostly with agricultural-based and nutritional-based things. Is this typical of?
No, it's actually not. We sort of, because we have been with RAP, the Relatives as Parents program, for so long, we just found the need to address the other side. We were, you know, coming in contact with families that are raising grandchildren or nieces or nephews because of addiction, which is primarily the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last couple of years, the idea has sort of been floating in our heads about what can we do to address maybe the other side. After doing a little bit of research and connecting and communicating with the Dyson Foundation, they actually funded a pilot program. So they're helping us fund this sort of as like an experimental. See how well it's received in the community.
Right. And when you think about it, you know, with the emphasis on nutrition and family wellness, on the physical side, it makes sense, right, to have an integrated wellness program for families and individuals and communities.
Absolutely.
Add that other element of social connectivity, which
right.
is so very
yes.
important
yeah,
to
critical.
A community's health.
Well, before we run out of time, tell us how folks can get in touch with you and get more information.
Sure. So the easiest way is probably to make a phone call. The telephone number is 845-340-3990. I'm at extension 343.
And I'm at extension 345.
So that's 340-3990, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. It always goes by too fast. And we really appreciate the great work that you're doing on behalf of our community. It's really
terrific.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.